Hello everyone, this is Mariam Ibrahim reporting to you from Brussels. Today on the Meta Podcast, we're starting a new and exciting series, the Election Special Series. I take you on a journey with me to discover more about the EU institutions, especially the Parliament, and how the work they do affects our lives. We're going to meet some great people, listen to amazing stories, and hopefully learn a lot together. So put aside all of your prejudices on the EU and let's go. Over the next three episodes, we're going to focus on the European elections. In case you didn't know, in May, we are going to elect our new European Parliament. Each country in the European Union is electing some parliamentarians, or so-called MEPs, and they represent us and our national interests at the EU level. During our first stop on this journey, we're talking about circular economy with our two guests, Piotr Barzak, joining us from sunny Barcelona, lucky you, and Jean-Pierre Schweitzer, joining us from not so sunny but still acceptable, I think, Brussels. Welcome to you both. It's a pleasure to have you here in this special edition of the podcast.
Hi, Marie-Emily. Hi.
For this first episode, I wanted to focus on a daily issue, which is circular economy, and more specifically, waste. Our society is experiencing a waste crisis. And when I say waste, I obviously mean plastic, but it's also electronics and all kind of general waste. And this situation has been proven not being sustainable. The take, make, and throwaway economy is over, and now the best solution is to move to a more circular economy, where waste is prevented and products reuse or recycle. So how do we do that, and how does the Parliament contribute to that? As we're going to see, it's not just about trying to find a solution to deal with waste, but it's mostly about preventing waste and getting the best out of it. Piotr and Jean-Pierre, you are both working on circular economy issues at the European Environmental Bureau, which is the largest network of environmental NGOs in Europe. Could you tell us more about your job?
Yes, absolutely, and thanks for inviting us today. So I'm basically responsible for product policy at the EEB, and this means that I cover some of the different legislation which addresses products at the EU level, more specifically eco-design and energy labelling, the GPP criteria, also the project around product environmental footprint, which is a product to assess the environmental impacts of products. And we also have a number of specific projects, like we are part of the Rethink Plastic Alliance, which is a coalition of NGOs working on plastics and plastic pollution. We are also part of the EU's official circular economy stakeholder platform, and we are within the coordination group of that. And amongst our members, which are a very important part of the EEB, we have an initiative with our Austrian member, the Umweltdachverband, called Circular Futures, which is an Austrian stakeholder platform about circular economy. So they're just some of the initiatives I'm involved in.
Yes, so I cover waste policies at the EEB, European waste policies. So it's mostly around waste framework directive, Landfill Directive, Packaging and Packaging Waste Directive. And as it was recently reviewed, now is the transposition period. So my main work these months and years is to assist our members, which is a huge network of NGOs. We have almost basically every member state in every country have an NGO expert working on waste. And yes, we are trying to push for better, faster and also ambitious transposition of those waste laws.
Thank you very much for that. I think this year, the European elections come at a crucial time because we're seeing kids in the street, people demanding action for climate and more generally for the environment. It is only my second European election, I must say, but I can feel the need for a change of perspective and a change of what we give importance to, what matters actually to us. I feel like circular economy is one of the keystones that need to be applied in our societies and in our economies. So before I start with some more precise questions, could we go back to the basics maybe and talk about what is circular economy exactly? I have said it was a way to distance ourselves from the take, make and throw away economy, but Piotr, could you maybe explain to us what is the concept exactly and how it is put in place in the EU?
Right. So of course, circular economy is a broad concept which can link to many different policies. It can be linked to energy, water, agriculture, even air quality. But when it comes to my expertise, which is waste policies, it has a huge role to play, and is basically the core of circular economy is in waste, although their roots are also somewhere else. The waste is the outcome of our metabolism, of a city metabolism, of society metabolism, in fact, of consumption. And as you said it correctly, that today we live in a linear economy, which is the produce and dispose, use and dispose, while a circular economy is there to prevent waste, first of all, of happening, and then to circulate back the materials. But first of all, broadly speaking, it is around the waste hierarchy, waste management hierarchy, which on top of that hierarchy, we have waste prevention measures, policies, then we have preparation for reuse and reuse, in fact, so direct reuse of products, then reparation and remanufacturing of products. And then only we have recycling, and it can be recycling, material recycling. So when we, it is only possible when we separate well waste, so that we have clean streams that can, of materials that can come back into the economy. Or we can have biological recycling, which is, in other words, composting, which is natural process of circulation of nutrients. And then the waste hierarchy also have two other levels of, let's say, managing waste, which are not preferable and are not part of circular economy, which are burning of waste and so incineration and landfilling. So that is in broad what we, from waste angle, what we see as circular economy.
Right. Thank you very much. That's a great definition. Actually, it gives perspective. Jean-Pierre, would you like to add to this definition?
Yeah, sure. So I think one issue is that circular economy has become a word a little bit like sustainability. Everyone is behind it, but when it comes to the details, we don't necessarily agree what we mean by circular economy. From the perspective of environmental NGOs, circular economy should be a means to an end. It's about reducing the depletion of biotic and abiotic resources. In absolute terms, reducing the amount of waste we produce and creating a just and equitable society in which we all want to live. For many others, I think it can be become a bit vague, and it can become to mean things like car sharing or simply recycling or even incineration, which might not necessarily be beneficial for the environment. So I think when you consider that a lot of Europeans consume, if we all consumed like Europeans, in many cases it would be, we'd need as much as three planets. So I think in terms of consumption and how we need to work towards consuming less resources, we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, that's a really interesting concept, circular economy. And it sounds really sustainable compared to other models that we see running at the moment. Could you tell us how circular economy is integrated in the EU? How we're doing, for example?
Yes. So, so now we're coming to the end of the term of the current commission, and as you might know, the commission had the circular economy action plan. Recently, they published a report on how that has been implemented, and we can see that there's been a lot of positive work in some areas. But we don't think it's the moment to celebrate yet, because in many areas, for example, in chemicals and also actions on specific topics like food waste, we see that very little has been done. So we think there's a long way to go still in the transition to a circular economy.
Of the question that I have, and I think a lot of people have too, is how do the citizen level and the EU level fit together? Because if you go on social media, you see a really a growing, and that's great, a movement, the zero waste movement. And you see so people trying to fit all of their annual waste in a mason jar and this kind of thing. So it gives a lot of ambition. I think it gives a lot of motivation to people to do some little things, little steps in their lives. But how do you see the balance between individual actions and the need for policy, what policy can achieve?
Yes, that's a really good question, which comes up quite a lot in discussions. So how much responsibility should be placed on citizens and how much should be left to policymakers? And the right answer is, of course, that everyone has a role to play. And in fact, the two can complement each other quite well. Placing too much responsibility on citizens, I feel, can often be a diversion tactic from industries who are actually reluctant to address pollution at source and really change their own behaviour. In the case of single-use plastics, the issue of marine litter reached such a high level of public attention and outcry that it was really necessary for policymakers to act. Recently in the European Parliament, the single-use plastics directive was formally approved, with 560 voting in favour and just 35 against. And I think that citizens too have widely supported this measure. But that doesn't mean that citizens can't take additional actions beyond the policymakers, for example, using refillable water bottles instead of consuming bottled water. It should be said also that in many areas, citizens are really the drivers of actions on the environment. For example, in air quality, we see that in many cities across Europe, it is citizens, often in association with environmental NGOs like Client Earth, who are putting pressure on their municipalities to improve the air quality legislation which are in place. So this really shows how citizens and NGOs can work together to be the checks and balances on policymakers. In our team, in the Right to Repair campaign, we have been campaigning on the issue of planned obsolescence because citizens across Europe demanded an end to products which fail beyond their expected lifetime. And what we've heard is that 77% of citizens have said they would rather repair products than buy new ones. Mm. So we are putting pressure on policymakers and manufacturers.
Thank you. And in both of your areas, actually, we've seen great progress last year, right? So waste and eco-design. About the waste issues, as you just said, Jean-Pierre, there was a series of flows designed to battle plastic that was agreed by all of the institutions of the EU. Pietrek, maybe could you tell us a bit more about that and how it how the work of the EU and of other NGOs got to the results that law were passed?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, the success of the anti-plastic measures reduction and those directives that we hear about is a result of work of many NGOs, and that we have to recognize not only at the EU level but very much national level, where citizens simply they raised their concerns, and media work was also very important. That, you know, this topic is finally visualized and prioritized. But it started actually a bit earlier, already with the green paper by the Commission in 2013, when the first most iconic item of plastic pollution and overconsumption was the bag, plastic bag. And soon after, the Commission came with the directive to reduce plastic bag consumption. And its success, also very quick and successful negotiation and then implementation all over Europe, made us citizens feel more empowered to ask for more, because indeed plastics is not only plastic bags, it's much more than that. And this recent directive also addresses other items, and there are many more to address. Yes, the success comes also from the civil society, because this is very visual. Every citizen is every day exposed to this plastic pollution. That's why it has been very successful to push for the politicians to take good decisions. Also, yes, politicians felt encouraged for that. So that's why also, this, as Jean-Pierre has said, that yesterday's vote at the parliament has been hugely supported by huge majority of the parliament. Makes also, I think, this paves the way forward to for the new commission and the new parliament to continue this way of engaging citizens in fighting pollution.
And we've also seen some repairability measures being adopted by, at the EU level and also supported by national governments. Jean-Pierre, the EIB, alongside with other NGOs such as ECOS, iFixit and the Restart Project, you are all running a campaign called Right to Repair, as you said. Could you maybe tell us more about your work to get measures and law agreed and applied in the EU? And what do all of this work mean for consumers?
Absolutely. So in the Right to Repair campaign, we are responding to people's frustration with products which are destined to fail. It's really important to say that the Right to Repair isn't our own invention. This is a global movement with people acting on this topic across the globe, and particularly in the US, where I think the concept really originated from.
Mm-hmm.
At the EU level, as you said, we are starting to build a coalition of different NGOs, but also repair groups and companies who really believe that this is an important issue. So as you said, with iFixit, ECOS, the Restart Project in the UK, Reuse and Zero Waste Europe, we are starting to develop actions and what we think is a way forward for the issue of repair. Most recently, we supported measures in the Eco Design Directive to make some products easier to repair and long lasting. The new legislation applies to lighting, displays, washing machines, dishwashers, and fridges. And for these products, the availability of spare parts, the ease of disassembly, and the access to repair manuals should all improve. So what does this mean for citizens? At the end of the day, this should mean that when their fridge or dishwasher or other products break down, they should be a bit cheaper and a bit easier to repair. So that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, thanks. And to all of this, what are you expecting from EU institutions, especially from the European Parliament that we're about to elect?
So the next step for the Right to Repair campaign will be to continue this work, as I've just described, to try to roll out the repairability requirements to other product groups. And in a way, this has already started because the European Commission is developing eco-design standards for other products such as tumble dryers and vacuum cleaners, where these kind of considerations for repair are being included.
Mm-hmm.
And the existing measures, which will hopefully be adopted soon, have set a good precedent for this work. From the perspective of the new MEPs, we think that a big challenge will be to persuade them that eco-design and energy labelling is very important. In general, the process behind developing these kind of standards and the content of the work can appear quite technical or a bit abstract. But in reality, the outcomes are really important for citizens and the environment. So that's something we want to try to communicate to the Parliament. So when we imagine in 2020 that this piece of legislation just saved every household in Europe over 500 euros in energy bills, we hope how they'll realise how important this bit of work is. And the next step will be to make sure everyone's smartphone batteries and cracked screens are easier to replace. Who can be opposed to that?
Yeah, true.
Yes, building on what Jean-Pierre has said, indeed, raising awareness is important, but we need to inform also the citizens. We need to give all the citizens the proper information, so the full transparency of what is included in our products, why they are dangerous, why some substances should not be there. The traceability of substances is very important. So the full disclosure of the materials that we are using, we are sometimes simply not aware as consumers. And secondly, to make those choices really much more convenient, I would say that we need also some economic incentives for that. So apart from information and encouraging and awareness raising, education, we know that in the end, majority of the consumers will choose what is cheaper. And that's why we should make the environmental choices, zero waste choices, reusable choices, repair cheaper than buying a new product. So here, shifting taxation or any incentives that are actually relevant for the EU levels, like, for example, the fees of extended producer responsibility, could be modulated in a way to favor design that is hazardous free, design that is aimed at the durability of a product, its quality, rather than cheap production of cheap resources brought back from somewhere around, outside Europe. And also this comes to energy. So whenever an energy efficient product is there, it should also be awarded by some lower taxes or lower EPR fees and resource efficient. So this is our call that we will, as citizens, consumers, and also as representatives of NGOs, we will call for to make ecological choices simply cheaper, because it is fair. It is fair to put less financial burden on those who pollute less and actually make those who pollute, so producers, but also consumers who choose consciously or not, but they choose a product that is polluting to pay more, and that's fair.
Okay, very well. Personally, I see at the moment movements that are really against the EU. So maybe it's because French media kind of have this kind of discourse, but it might also be something more general in that anti-EU talks, and I feel like it's growing, and I don't really like that. And I think one of the things that make people doubt the EU is really the broad and theoretical aspect of the policy process. I feel not everyone understands what's happening in the EU level, what's at stake. But I also see with the adoption of laws that are really concrete, like banning plastic straws or banning pesticides that are bad for bees. Those are really examples that make sense to everyone. So what would be your ask as a citizen for the parliament in the next 5 years? What do you feel is important to acknowledge and develop?
Sure. The European Parliament and the Commission, because the Parliament will choose the Commission that will continue, I hope, the way of tackling waste problems as the last Commission did, or even better. So first of the couple of issues at EU level, monitoring and encouraging for a rapid and ambitious transposition of the waste law. This is really very important that all of the laws are implemented and no gaps are continued. Yes, the EU waste law, the waste framework directive provisions that were reviewed last year. That's so the transposition. Secondly is so I would say that waste management is very often a local issue. Decisions have to be taken locally, but those best examples around Europe have to be taken up and spread all over Europe. So whenever we have situations that cities do take their individual independent decisions on banning certain articles, at least in their public spaces, so through green public procurement, they can also encourage other policymakers at local or national level, and Brussels is a good place to spread this information at the European Parliament as well, or the Circular Economy Platform, Stakeholders Platform. These are the way I would encourage MEPs to be very bold about. Then there is also European Parliament's engagement in the decision making that European Commission has to continue, because in the last revision of the Waste Framework Directive we have a couple of provisions where European Commission has to deliver on new guidances on separate collection for other streams that are not covered now, or new methodologies for calculating recycling. These are much more technical issues, but I think the scrutiny from the parliament, which is the democratically elected institution, are very important here. So we would see, we would hope for more engagement from the parliament. And each MEP should have also an obligation to bring the good examples back to their country. So yeah, I would say also when it looks to plastics, extending the current directive and also packaging, very important packaging directive where that will be revised regarding the essential, so-called essential requirements for packaging, so kind of design for a packaging. This is in the months to come. This is an important part, and as you said, marine litter is an important topic, and a lot of marine litter comes from packaging. So reviewing how our packaging is done, whether it's overproduced, I mean, whether our products are overpackaged, or if packaging is not fit for purpose or not fit for recycling, then yes, any non-recyclable packaging has to be phased out. So yes, this is the new part of legislation where I hope Parliament will be strong.
Okay, thanks. So what would be you ask as a citizen?
So when I speak to friends from the UK about what things they're concerned about if Brexit is to take place, one of the things which I was surprised to hear being mentioned a lot was about roaming charges. So the fact that in the EU we now have a law in place which means that you don't have to pay exorbitant fees when you travel and you call someone in your home country. And it sounds like something so minor, but actually these small things make a difference to people's everyday lives. And building on what I was talking about before, the example of making smartphones more easily repairable could be an example just like that. That's something people get frustrated about. They end up paying more money than they should, and it has an impact on the environment. So these are the kind of small issues where the EU can take a major role.
Mm-hmm.
I also have to say I'm getting fed up with how quickly my clothes wear out, and I'm also concerned about the issue of microfibers. So I hope the EU will take decisive action on fast fashion, and you know our colleague Emily is starting to campaign on this issue. And since working at the EB, I'm also becoming more aware about the chemicals which are being used in products like textiles, packaging, furniture. And I think this is an area, as I said before, where the existing commission has really failed to act. So this is something which I think the EU should make more prominent in their work.
Mm-hmm. And are you hopeful for the future? Do you feel like the EU is on the right track to achieve all of this and more?
Absolutely. And I think working in the offices here, when we've seen students marching past our office on a Thursday, you have to be hopeful. And I think continuing to work for a safe and clean environment in Europe, what else should we be except for hopeful?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So I'm by nature I'm quite optimistic and always trying to find good points. So yes, definitely I think recent successes in different directives show that the action is there, but unfortunately we need faster action and really we need to speed up this transition to circular economy and the real circular economy. We see new generation also asking more and more, and really this is strong, and I hope this will bring this will encourage the legislators to take action, to take decision that maybe before they were a bit more difficult to take, to because always growth and businesses were the priority, and now we see that maybe another way is necessary, and this really necessary is crucial to save our planet. So I would say let's stay optimistic, let's aim for even very ambitious targets and aims, but the way to get there is we have to find encourage more and more and find more alliances and collaborate with businesses to get there, And I hope the pace of this will be collaborative and fast.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Emily.
This was the Meta Podcast edition election special. I would like to remind you that all of the information about the podcast are below in the text. It will be translated in English, French, German, Spanish, and Italian, so you can find all of the information. Also, Jean-Pierre talked about the fashion campaign that we're developing. We're going to receive Emily McIntosh to talk about it in a few weeks, so stay tuned to hear more about our work on fashion. And also, this program was created with the support of the LIFE project of the European Union. Just a little disclaimer, this communication reflects the author's view and does not commit the donors. Thank you very much, and see you soon.
Thank you to everybody.
Bye-bye.